It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. I imagine that every single person out there is being overwhelmed with AI, whether it is in fact or just the way that you are thinking about your work and how you might include it, or you're anxious that you haven't included it yet. It is the same across the board with companies large and small. And so today, I wanted to bring on someone to talk about how to navigate these short-term challenges, acute pain, things that happen, and how to balance it with a longer view. So today I have on Jennifer Turner, who is the Director of Organizational Strategy at Alphabet. For those of you who don't know, Alphabet is the parent company of Google, and she's been at Alphabet/Google for a long time. Jennifer Turner, thank you so much for coming on, making the time for us. Really appreciate you coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Thank you, Josh. I'm really thrilled to be here today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So you've been at Google a long time. Let's just start with kind of what you are doing. You are going to be sharing some insight and wisdom of your own accord, of your own observations. But let's start by grounding the conversation. What is it that you do at Alphabet?
Sure. Yes, I have been at Alphabet a long time. When I started, I worked with Google and in Google proper. And then about 10 years ago, when Alphabet was created, I started working exclusively with our portfolio companies that are not Alphabet, or excuse me, not Google. And there are 12 of those companies. They have ebbed and flowed over the years. My role is really to make those companies as successful as possible. And that has meant different things across the years that I've been doing it. Mm. Sometimes I am an advisor. Sometimes I am an executive coach. Sometimes I'm doing process engineering with people. So it really spans a huge gamut of topics and areas. And it depends on the maturity of the company, the transition they might be going through, gaps or places where they've had an unexpected departure, things like that. I will lean in to make sure that that doesn't impact their ability to be successful long term.
It's like you play an objective role. Like, that's the value I found of being someone on the outside working with, you know, clients. It's you, when you're inside, you really lose that perspective. There's something valuable about having someone on the outside being able to say, okay, everybody, calm down. We can handle this.
Yes. And, you know, I'm outside, but I'm also inside. So
that's,
it's a
right,
really,
yeah,
unique position. I am a free resource for my companies. And so there is no risk from that perspective of, are we going to get our money's worth? Can we afford to spend money on something that feels slightly peripheral? So that's one piece. Two, I am a trusted advisor who has context. I understand what our Alphabet leaders are saying and thinking. I know the players. And like I said, I've been working with these companies for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I understand the business model. They don't have to spend a lot of time and energy catching me up when I come in or out around a particular topic. And then third, I am an objective third party. I don't report up through their leadership teams. I can say some of the hard things. I'm not as worried about the political ramifications internally in any one of those companies. And so I do have the ability to hold up the mirror to say the hard things that maybe some other people wouldn't necessarily want to say, because they're either worried that's going to jeopardize their job, or it's going to have that company never hire them again.
That's right. It's almost the ideal scenario to be able to have an organization like this. This is not where you started. How did this role come about? Was this something that you proposed? Was this like, how did this happen? And I'm only curious. Jennifer and I didn't talk about talking about this, but I just realized how powerful what you do is. So what was the genesis? You can kind of take that wherever you want to take it.
Yeah. You know, it's been an evolution. No one sat down and crafted my job description. And I think originally, when my team was created and hired, the perception of what was needed at these companies was very different from what it is now. And I would say, you know, they thought we need subject matter experts in a number of topics to help these companies stand up on their own. I was a subject matter expert in one of those topics. As I started to understand and work with my clients, I realized that, one, they all needed different things. And what they needed, where I could really provide the highest and best value to them, was in a very different space. So I said to my leaders at the time, and I'm very fortunate, I work with really, really wonderful executives. I said, you've hired me for this. I don't think that's what they need. I think this is where I can be much more valuable. Can I go and do that? And they said, yeah, let's give it a try. And I would say that probably every year and a half to 2 years, my job evolves and changes because companies evolve and change and their needs evolve and change. In the early days, I was like, oh my goodness, they need this gap filled. And I don't even have that subject matter expertise. How can I go find it so that I can give it to them? And now my work is much more a evolution of organizational strategy from the business goals to the processes to the capabilities and metrics and structures that the company might need in order to be as successful and, you know, optimizing for what they care about, really achieve those goals as efficiently and effectively as possible.
That's incredible. I'm already thinking, like, how might, you know, a smaller organization create a job to be done, right? We're describing this job to be done that you're fulfilling in a way that's can speak truth to power. All right. Well, we'll leave that alone for a moment.
I think this is a great thing because I don't want people to be scared to create roles like this. I think I actually worked in another company prior to Google where I played a role like this for a short period of time. I had been at that company for 8 years. The CFO came to me and said, you know this business so well. I want to put you in this special project role, and I'd like you to go across the organization and figure out where can we do things differently? I think that roles and responsibilities and organizational silos actually hold companies back from being successful.
Amen. Say more.
Yeah. So the more you can break down, I feel really bad because all the people who dialed in to hear about AI, we haven't talked about it at all. But
this is good too. special gift with purchase.
So I work with a lot of small companies and I advise a lot of, you know, small startups outside of even my role at Alphabet. What I often see is even tiny little companies are so concerned about designating roles and responsibilities and making it clear who does what in the organization, that it actually breaks down collaboration. It breaks down team and long-term goal ownership and accountability. Groups start to think about the piece of the puzzle that they are responsible for and own and do that as well as they can, but they're not thinking about what comes before or after. They are not measured or rewarded on the actual company goal. And it becomes a very individualistic environment. And that's true of organizations that I've seen that are, you know, 10 people, less with the 10 people, but definitely I see it at 100. I see it at 1,000. I see it, you know, and I see it at, you know, 150,000. What I try and do with my clients is say, you know, you're so small. Don't let organizational boundaries hold you back from working together. How often are you talking about the work, the handoffs, the gray space in between? How much are teams getting together to work on a problem that is downstream of what they actually own?
Yeah.
And I think that's really where we get accelerators.
So compelling. There's so many different ways to think about this. I will say that there is a sort of thematic connection between that kind of immediacy of defining roles and the longer term value, right? It's like the small and the big. And what, and the small right now, which doesn't feel so small, admittedly, is how does an organization, what everybody understands now that AI is going to play a big role. And we all have this anxiety. Am I doing it right? Do I know enough? Do I da 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 da? And you expressed to me that with York, you're seeing some of this panic, and it is actually undermining the longer term value. And I hadn't ever thought of it that way. And I would love for you to kind of describe some of the trends that you're seeing and how we might, and I'll prompt you, I'll ask some question, but how we might help, like, do better in our own selves as leaders and managers and even individual contributors to overcome short-term, like, reactionary and taking that long-term view. So what are you seeing? Let's start with that. And how might people be coping with it?
Yeah. So I'm really lucky, Josh, in that, one, I have a portfolio of clients, but I also have a wide network of peers and colleagues that I work with in the industry and in companies around the Bay Area. And I'm talking to a lot of people a lot of the time. And what I'm seeing and hearing is this rush and fear around AI. If we don't embrace AI, use AI, get AI into what we are doing, we will be obsolete. We will be out of jobs. We will be run over by the competition. And I think all of that is true. But it was also true in many of the transformational moments we've had in technology and in evolution of our business structures before. What is different about AI is the pace of change, the pace of growth. And so that frenzy between the AI that we saw a year and a half ago and what AI can do today and what AI is likely to do tomorrow and 6 months from now, that pace of change is so much faster than what we've seen in other technologies. When the mobile phone came out, we had a long time to get used to that before the next versions of mobile phones came out. And we don't have that in this moment in time. And I think that that is what is causing a lot of the panic and the worry and the rush to have short-term goals. You know, it's one thing to say, how does our technology product incorporate AI into what we do so that it can be a better product? That's one thing. And the types of goals that you might put in for your company to make that happen, you know, they're not going to happen overnight. They are going to be milestone based. They might be quarters out. They might be even longer out. And I think we do need some sense of urgency in thinking about, like, what do we want the product to look like a year from now, 2 years from now? And are we working towards that? Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I am seeing is people scrambling to put AI into everything else. How are you using AI to write your emails? How are you using AI to recruit your talent? How are you using AI to tie your shoes in the morning? And if you're not, you're going to get left behind. Now, I think that's important too. And I'm not saying we shouldn't all be experimenting with, embracing, trying out AI. What worries me is when I hear companies or people or teams changing their long-term goals for short-term goals around incorporating AI. Mm.
It's interesting to hear that, right? Like, I'll push back and say, like, well, this is a paradigmatic shift, right? I don't know if that's the right word. Is that a word? This is a huge shift. And so wouldn't my long-term goals change because of something like AI? Why is that the indicator that you're like, uh-oh, we're making some poor choices here?
Okay, so, you know, I work a lot in the talent space. I work in talent, I work in people, I work in culture. The culture or environment that you are trying to build might be a high performance culture.
Fair.
How you get to a high performance culture might be many different steps along the way. AI might be a part of that. But that long-term goal of having a high-performance culture that's a North Star. That shouldn't necessarily change. Whereas when that goes away and people start saying, our goal is to change our performance management system so AI is doing the work.
And they forget about the longer view. They forget about the high-performance culture.
Is that evolution? Is that infusion of technology actually serving the long-term goal? And these smaller short-term goals then become something that have the risk of sending you down a tree branch that's actually not the main trunk of where you're headed.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm not saying don't set short-term goals. I'm not saying don't embrace AI and experiment and try out the new tools and get comfortable with them and play. And that tool that you put into your process or your structures could be better, gone, different, whatever, in 3 months. Mm-hmm. Everything we do should be servicing that longer term goal. Now, I work with startups. You know, what is a long-term goal? Is it the 10-year plan, the 5-year plan that a lot of Fortune 500 companies have? No, it probably isn't. And so what is the time horizon that makes sense for your stage of company, your maturity? And is that actually getting you closer to your mission and your mm-hmm. vision? Mm-hmm. Right? Like maybe an 18-month goal is actually your long-term goal. That's okay. Maybe a 12-month goal is your long-term goal.
Often it is now, right?
Yes. But your goal shouldn't be to embed AI.
That's a tactic. That's a tool. Yes.
That's right.
It is an AI version of Wag the Dog. And what I am realizing you're describing is an age-old problem of, you know, tactics over strategy.
Absolutely.
And it just, we're now more vulnerable because it feels more urgent. It's really important.
So urgent right now. We've never been in a moment in time where the hockey stick is that steep. Mm-hmm. And we're experiencing it every day. I took an AI class and, it was a wonderful hands-on, practice these tools, get to use them. And then a month later, I took it again. And the tools were different. They were evolved. They were better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I took it again because I'm one of those learners who can't just like I took away 30% of what I got from that class, practicing it, right? So I needed reinforcement, and my reinforcement was going again, right? And remembering the things that I had already learned and getting some things that maybe I hadn't seen before. But the content changed in that rapid environment, right? Yeah. And I think this is something that is stressing people out. Because especially if you are someone who is not an early adopter,
mm-hmm.
or if you are in a field where technology is not what you use every day, all day,
mm-hmm.
it's scary. And then you embrace it and you try it and you start to experiment with it, and then it changes and it's not good enough. And what you used yesterday is like small potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how do you advise your clients to anchor in the longer view? Like, it is so, I mean, what we're talking about is just such a human thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the short term, like I can't not react to the short term thing. And it is a practice on the individual level, on the team level, on the organizational level, on the company level, right? It's a practice to try to like look up, right? The practice of looking up. How are you thinking about a tool or tools or a practice to help folks pull themselves out of the panic of the everyday?
Yeah. Okay. So I think this goes back to our earlier conversation.
I think so too.
And it feeds into this, and it feeds into the, the horrible habit that everyone has of, standing like this and looking at their phones, right?
Yep.
To be successful in business, you have to have a forward-looking and wide peripheral view.
Mm.
And the best leaders I know anticipate and see around corners in a really holistic and healthy way. When you teach that to everyone within the organization, you are much more likely mm-hmm. to know how your tactic feeds into the long-term goal. You are much more likely to know that the experiment that you're running, and now I want to talk about experiments a lot, but the experiment that you're running is actually leading you in the direction of your long-term goal, not, spinning you down a yellow brick road that is not headed toward us, right? I think that peripheral view, that lack of blinders, that less silos, that's how I advise my companies. That's how I advise my friends. That's how I advise my kid. The more you look up and see around you, the more of a difference you can make in the world.
Mm. That's great. The more you look up and see around you, the bigger the difference you can make in the world. I do feel, here's sort of the experience, like the way that I think about these kinds of look up, see around you, is we tend to, it takes energy. You have to put energy into the system, because if not, right, you have entropy. Entropy is like, I think about entropy a lot, right? Because without putting energy in the system, the organization, the team, whatever, and so we're exhausted, right? You said it, you're stressed. You're doing all these things. And to me, from just an individual psychological point of view, it feels like folks, and I just had lunch with someone today, and she said, I am so tired. I just want to get a job where I can go and hide for a few months, for a few years, whatever it might be. Ooh. Yeah. It's real. And maybe it's not that extreme for everybody, but there is something to it.
I think we all take ourselves way too seriously. We don't have enough fun.
Agreed.
And this whole concept of like, what if you were choosing happiness every day?
Mm-hmm.
Your life actually look different. Like, I'm excited about AI coming into the world because I do think it's going to change the workforce. And I do think it's going to change how we do things. What if we were meant to work less? And the fact that some jobs are going to not be necessary anymore actually allows us to spend time with our friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
What if that was the long-term goal? What if we could spend time and energy on, I don't know, housing all the people who don't have houses, because AI was doing all the stuff that we're sitting behind desks doing. And the meaning behind our work changes. I don't ever want to be in an environment where I'm hiding from my work or my colleagues, where I'm so stressed and worried. And this is, I talked a bit about experiments already. I think when you think about using AI or anything in a small trial experiment way,
mm-hmm.
and you test out, how's this going to work? What do I love about it? What do I hate about it? What am I afraid of? How do I get over that? Maybe this isn't the right application for it. Let's try it somewhere else. It feels less heavy and less worrisome on a smaller scale. And if you are, maybe your long-term goal is to figure out where AI will accelerate you and be best placed to get you to that long thing, whatever your company thing is, right? But it's not implement this technique in this process with these people by this date. Because it's too short-sighted.
Well, like you said, the tools are going to change.
Yeah.
So even if it was perfect.
Let's stop taking ourselves too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And let's experiment and play.
Yeah. I think experiments are powerful. And what I like about this and what I think we are going to need to keep in mind as AI and all technology continues to evolve is that we don't know what role it's going to play. We don't know what it's going to do. And I think there's sort of this interesting difference that's worth talking about, the difference between sort of experimentation and play. And you talked about both. So to me, when I think about play, it's like, I don't know, I'm just going to kind of push it around and learn from doing. Experiment is, I have a hypothesis, I think I'm going to try this, it's not permanent, could work, could not. And I think we need to develop that mindset of play, learn, experiment, learn, and keep that lightness as opposed to getting like sinking down into tactics.
Yes. And I think when you categorize experiments separate from play, you lose the lightness of it. If your experiment fails, does that mean you're a failure? Does that mean you can't do what you're meant to do? Does that mean all of your goals are wrong? Does it mean all of your plans are thrown out the window? Whereas if an experiment, yeah, maybe you do have a hypothesis. Some games you have rules, some games you don't have rules, right? But the lightness of it might be right, it might not be right. Whatever comes out of this experiment is actually going to be interesting information. It's going to help define the next game I might play. It might help inform the next experiment I try. But again, my self-worth is not dependent on the research project that I've crafted and done and, you know, spent 10 years on.
I'm connecting this back to where we started, which is the opportunity to see problems that you can solve and the removal of the boundaries. And I do feel like there's something in the combination between this, and this is what I hope for business, where we learn how to redesign business so that they're humans working together and not in these silos. And we really have to work to actually make sure that that's, or be conscious. Let's be conscious about how to make that happen. And if we are, I love what you're saying. I love the term lightness, right? Like if we can go in and be lighter about this is my job. This is my job. This is my role. This is my responsibilities. These are my KPIs. I think the people who are going to succeed, and I'm going to go right back to our original thought, which is what we want is fewer short-term, like you are going to win, lose, fail on the short term, and long view. Take the long view, and to sustain that, not to get bogged down in that, you need that lightness. And that was an unexpected contribution and an idea that you brought to this that I was not expecting to go to, but feels like one of the most salient points that I'm going to walk away from this conversation with.
Yeah, I think there's a superpower that I see in humans who are embracing and adopting this AI moment. And it's really about flexibility, agility, excitement and enthusiasm with change, a playfulness. Like these are the skills I think we need to be teaching people way earlier in their lives. It's not about can you code or can you, manage a financial table. I'm sure that's necessary too, or maybe not. Maybe AI will do that for us, right? What's important though is that you can flex and adapt, that you can not take yourself so seriously, that you can not attach your self-worth to whatever you've envisioned or planned or expected of your life story. That we can actually adapt, and that's fun, and it's okay to make mistakes, that we're going to learn from them, and that what we know today is probably not what we're going to know tomorrow, and that's okay. We don't teach that in school.
Yeah. And we don't learn it. In life, right? Like we don't teach it in school, we don't learn it in life.
Definitely. I can't tell you how many executives I have met throughout the years who have the hardest time accepting that that change is expected, that change is good, that change doesn't mean failure. I mean, they're pretty comfortable with it when change is what they've decided.
Decide for yourself. But I'm talking
about change that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
And that's something, okay, luckily, I learned early in my life and in my career. And I got okay with it. I got comfortable with it. I did some self-work to say, like, it's okay to let go of those beliefs. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're getting into a whole nother episode.
Exactly. All the middle school teachers need to be thinking about this.
Yeah. Oh, man, this has been incredible. Jennifer Turner, Director of Organizational Strategy at Alphabet, thank you for spending time with me and us on Great Mondays Radio. This has been really enlightening and thought-provoking, and I just really enjoy our conversation, and I was so glad we were able to record one and share it with the world. So thank you so much for coming on.
So fun, Josh. I loved the conversation as well. Can't wait to see this.
Good. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.